The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. The White House celebrating a surging economy.
But the president can't shake off bad news.
Congress wants to know what President Trump discussed with Vladimir Putin.
It's not for me to disclose the contents of those conversations.
A U.S. threat to a NATO ally.
The United States will impose significant sanctions on Turkey.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend with a roundup of the White House with correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Stephen, we watched some developments in the Russia probe this week. What do we learn?
Well, Steve, the week ended with a meeting here at the White House in the Situation Room, a National Security Council meeting on election meddling. And it happened as the senator from Missouri, Claire McCaskill, the Democrat, says that her office became victim to a phishing attack. And that is the attempt to get passwords of people who work in the office. The McCaskill staff says that it was a failed attempt. But another example of how the Russians are actively trying to interfere in this election cycle. And that's what led to the Situation Room meeting here Friday.
We also heard a tape that Michael Cohen secretly recorded of a conversation he had just a couple months before the November 2016 presidential election with then-candidate Donald Trump. That was released by Cohen's attorney to CNN. What did we hear on that tape?
The tape appears to have the two men, Michael Cohen and his former client, President Trump, then-candidate Trump, discussing a $150,000 payment to AMI, the parent company of the National Enquirer. What was a key takeaway was the fact that this discussion took place at all, that the Republican nominee for president of the United States in the week before the election is talking about the prospect of buying a story from the National Enquirer about an alleged affair, which the president insists never happened.
What about reports that the president also knew about a meeting between his son and Russians at Trump Tower?
Well, the president continues to deny that, too. He issued a tweet on Friday morning reiterating the denials of a year ago when the story of the infamous 2016 Trump Tower meeting first became public knowledge.
We also saw an effort in Congress to impeach Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. That doesn't seem likely, though, does it?
House Speaker Paul Ryan said Thursday he does not support the effort led by the House Freedom Caucus members to impeach Rod Rosenstein, alleging that Rosenstein erred and committed high crimes and misdemeanors by refusing to appoint a second special counsel to look into the Hillary Clinton email affair and to investigate the investigators who are conducting what the White House has called this witch hunt.
We also ended the week with economic news with the second quarter GDP up more than 4%. The president celebrated it Friday.
We are seeing the effects of the American economic miracle.
The president also taking some trade action with the EU, which he says will benefit farmers who sell soybeans, as his administration offers them billions of dollars in subsidies to blunt that impact of Chinese tariffs. So is this a win for President Trump over the last week on trade and the economy?
It is a good number. I mean, 4.1% GDP growth in the second quarter. The president calls it an economic turnaround of historic proportions. America's winning again, he says. He says it's due to his tax cuts and his tariffs. But in this case, the president didn't mention the fact that his own White House in the last couple of weeks has projected that next year we'll have a federal budget deficit of $1 trillion, mainly because of those tax cuts.
Stephen, you were also inside the White House a few days ago where the president's communications team told a reporter who asked a question from CNN that her question was inappropriate and she would not be allowed to attend an open press event. What do you make of that whole situation?
Yeah, that was a really stunning and upsetting development. Caitlin Collins specifically asked about Michael Cohen and the audio tape that was released the night before. The president didn't want to take questions about it in that setting. Caitlin Collins persisted, as did other reporters, continuing to ask questions as the low-level press staffers called wranglers tried to usher us out of the room. And Caitlin Collins was told that she couldn't attend the later announcement of the EU trade arrangement because of the way that she conducted herself in the Oval Office. It was a stunning development. The White House Press Corps, that is the Correspondents Association and individual members and organizations, issued statements condemning the White House action.
And finally, let's rewind and go all the way back to the beginning of the week where the president picked a fight with Iran. What's the impact of that, or will that resurface again?
Undoubtedly, the issue with Iran will resurface. But what happened Monday to start the week was an all-caps tweet from the president in which he said that we're no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. It was a response to Iranian President Hassan Rouhani saying that the president should not play with the lion's tail, that peace with Iran would be the mother of all peace, but war with Iran would be the mother of all wars. Well, we didn't really hear much about it through the week, but it was quite a flare-up on Monday morning.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet.
Vladimir Putin says he's prepared to invite President Trump to Moscow. It comes after the White House delayed an invite for Putin to Washington until next year. On Wednesday, senators on the Foreign Relations Committee pressed Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at a hearing Wednesday to try to learn more about what the president discussed with Putin in a private meeting in Helsinki.
Several senators tried.
It's not for me to disclose the contents of those conversations.
But Secretary of State Mike Pompeo would not give them any new details about the president's controversial meeting with Putin.
New Jersey Democrat Bob Menendez wanted to know if the president promised to weaken sanctions.
Senator, the president was very clear with Vladimir Putin about U.S. positions.
He told you that.
Senator, I understand the game that you're playing.
Mr. Secretary, with all due respect, I don't appreciate you characterizing my questions.
The committee's chair, Republican Bob Corker, said the questions reflect a broader concern.
But it's the president's actions that create tremendous distrust in our nation, among our allies.
The skepticism extended to U.S. policy on North Korea, where the ruling party reportedly now says it will not give up its nuclear weapons despite U.S. overtures. Secretary Pompeo insisted the nuclear talks are yielding concrete results, but he declined to specify what exactly those results are. Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Vice President Pence has threatened Turkey with sanctions if it doesn't release an American pastor held there.
If Turkey does not take immediate action to free this innocent man of faith and send him home to America, the United States will impose significant sanctions on Turkey until Pastor Andrew Brunson is free.
Turkey's foreign minister responded, saying his country won't tolerate threats. Brunson was let out of jail Wednesday after 1.5 years to serve house arrest. He's accused of supporting a failed coup attempt, but denies those charges. Back here at CBS, the company's board of directors is responding to allegations of improper conduct, reportedly by CEO Les Moonves. The company says it's investigating and will take appropriate action. Coming up, the battle over 3D printed guns. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The race to replace House Speaker Paul Ryan's heating up. That's if Republicans can maintain control of the House after the midterm elections.
Ohio right-wing Republican Jim Jordan confirmed his candidacy.
We think there's some things that need to be changed, and we got a letter that is going out to every single member.
In that letter, Jordan wrote, President Trump has taken bold action on behalf of the American people. Congress has not held up its end of the deal. Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy is viewed as the favorite to succeed the retiring Speaker Paul Ryan, while Majority Whip Steve Scalise also is seen as a potential contender. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
Several gun control groups have filed an emergency injunction to prevent people from posting online blueprints for 3D printed guns that have been given the green light from the U.S. August 1st.
This is the Liberator, a 3D printed gun. It's the design of 30-year-old Cody Wilson, founder of Defense Distributed, a pro-gun group.
Anywhere there's a computer, there's a weapon.
The plastic weapon is made with a 3D printer, internet connection, and this free online guide. This one only fires once.
It only needs to be lethal once. I mean, that's the idea, right?
Wilson's 3D blueprints include AR-15s. The State Department demanded Wilson take down his blueprints 5 years ago. He complied but fired back with a lawsuit citing free speech rights.
We said, no, we're Americans. Americans have the right to access this data, unquestionably.
After a legal battle, a settlement was recently reached. Starting next Wednesday, the State Department will allow Wilson to start posting his 3D gun blueprints on his website.
What I'm opposed to is technology unchecked.
David Chipman is a retired ATF special agent who says 3D printed guns present a real and present danger because they are unregulated and untraceable.
We're basically, you know, handing the keys to the store to terrorists and armed criminals.
Gun hobbyist Mike Crumling says the threat of 3D firearms is overblown. He designed his own 3D guns.
The printing process is not dangerous. The testing process would be the most dangerous part about this.
Crumling says it could take up to 40 hours to print one 3D firearm.
It's not quite that simple.
But Chipman believes this technology will fall into the wrong hands.
I guarantee you 5-10 years from now, this is going to be a real threat to public safety.
3D guns can already be made legally, but they cannot be sold. Nikki Batiste, CBS News, New York.
Rain has flooded parts of the East Coast as the area braces for more storms. Correspondent DeMarco Morgan reports from Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Parts of Pennsylvania remain underwater as a relentless storm offers no rest for waterlogged residents. Pennsylvania's Department of Transportation says 97 roads were closed as of Wednesday afternoon. Views from high above show the pockets of flooding and swollen waterways.
I was surprised how quick the creek came up. And I'm just hoping it goes down enough to absorb the next storm that's coming in.
Hershey Park closed due to the weather impact on roads and bridges leading into the park. Just north, Knoebels Amusement Park also shut down after floodwaters rushed into the complex.
As soon as we get one thing cleaned up, it seems like something else goes down.
In Baltimore County, Maryland, a break from the rain means a rush to clean up. Crews cut apart massive trees that came loose from the soaked ground. And some of the crest gates of the Conowingo Dam were open to reduce water levels. Heavy rain pushed through the ceiling of this restaurant in Arlington, Virginia. No one was hurt. Rescue crews in nearby Washington, D.C. were called when floodwaters washed this mail truck off the road.
It was a river. It was a river back here. But this definitely has put a damper on things.
In North Carolina's Outer Banks, they've even started pumping the water out of the roadway and into the ocean in an effort to reduce the flooding. Back in Pennsylvania, a sinkhole in Palmyra is making residents frustrated and emotional.
It's very concerning. I mean, we're in a neighborhood where it's just happening and you just never know when you're going to wake up and have this in your backyard.
The Red Cross has opened two shelters, including one here in Hershey. As for rain, you can expect more sometime next week. DeMarco Morgan, CBS News, Hershey, Pennsylvania.
A wildfire 90 miles east of Los Angeles is threatening to destroy several mountain communities.
Crews launched an all-out assault in the air and on the ground as the Cranston fire tripled in size. Several homes never stood a chance.
It's our homes. What can we do? You know, it's just devastating seeing everything go like this.
What are your biggest concerns at this point?
Right now, our biggest concerns are these temperatures. The temperatures going up, the humidity's dropping. That is just a recipe for disaster.
Authorities believe the blaze was deliberately set by 32-year-old Brandon McGlover. He was arrested and charged with 5 counts of arson. The governor has declared a state of emergency here. And in Northern California, where an out-of-control wildfire near the city of Redding has quickly grown to 20,000 acres. Meantime, a fast-moving brush fire near San Francisco caught the town of Clayton off guard.
There were firefighters all the way around it, and they had to get out of the way. It's just too much, too fast.
And more than 3,600 firefighters have bolstered containment lines around a wildfire near Yosemite National Park.
This is the worst-case scenario. A family's home burned to the ground. 4 other properties were also destroyed in this fire, and now firefighters are working around the clock to protect everyone's home in this area. Jamie Yukas, CBS News, Idlewild, California.
Overseas, Greek authorities suspect arson could be to blame for wildfires near Athens that have killed dozens of people. Our Seth Doan visited the scenes of destruction.
The fast-moving flames quickly consumed homes and buildings, fueled by 50-mile-per-hour wind gusts. Some tried to escape on highways, only to be surrounded by walls of fire. Aerial video reveals burned-out neighborhoods and singed land. This man, searching for whatever he could find near where his wife was killed, was still in shock.
I took my baby and ran towards the sea. My wife, I didn't know what happened. I think she burned herself here.
In the coastal town of Mati, a popular tourist destination, the charred remains of victims were recovered.
This is where one of the most horrifying scenes unfolded. A group of people were running for safety, and they made it this far to the water's edge, but encountered this cliff too steep to jump off. So they huddled together, but were overcome by the flames. And rescuers were shocked to find the bodies of 25 people. The position of those bodies showed that they were hugging each other when they died.
Some who did make it to the sea described disorienting scenes. Nikos Stavrinidis tried to swim away from the shore. It's horrible to see the person next to you drowning and not be able to help him, he said. The Coast Guard and private boats rescued more than 700 people who'd fled to beaches or right into the water.
Workers are sifting through wreckage, looking for more victims, and in some cases, removing debris. The fires are still burning, and the fear is if those winds pick up again, they could spread those flames. Seth Doan, CBS News, Mati, Greece.
Up next, how many migrant kids are still waiting to be reunited with their families on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Sunday nights, Monday mornings, or Tuesday afternoons. You can listen to 60 Minutes whenever you want with the weekly podcast from CBS News.
How do we know you're telling the truth?
Because I have no reason to lie.
With hard-hitting investigative reports, interviews, and profiles.
Did these documents that you got prove corruption?
Absolutely.
From a variety of CBS News correspondents and contributors.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
For the biggest scoops and the best storytelling, subscribe to the 60 Minutes podcast today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The Trump administration says more than 1,800 children 5 years and older have been reunited with parents or guardians after a court-ordered deadline passed Thursday. Still, hundreds of children remain separated from their migrant parents after crossing the U.S. border.
There are still more than 700 separated. 463 of them have parents who may have already been deported.
It's not entirely clear how the government is defining eligible and ineligible.
John Sandwig is a former acting director of Immigration Customs Enforcement.
I'm worried here that we have 460 parents who have now been deported to Central America. There is a very high likelihood that those parents are not going to see their children again.
Immigration attorneys say the government is making unilateral decisions that include a parent's health condition and possible criminal history with no oversight.
There's a lot of concern that that standard is being inconsistently applied or parents are being arbitrarily denied access to their children.
So for the hundreds of ineligible children, shelters will continue to be their home while the government figures out its next move.
The ACLU is asking a federal judge to stop all deportation of these separated families for now. They're also asking for a new deadline, August 1st, for information on reunification. Mireya Villarreal, CBS News, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Nicaragua's President Daniel Ortega is ignoring calls from protesters to step down amid deadly ongoing violence there. CBS News correspondent Manuel Bajorquez heard some of their stories.
Many of the protesters say they're being threatened and forced to flee their towns. We're about to meet one young man who has been hiding out in a safe house.
He goes by Sombra, or Shadow.
So your family stayed behind, but because you participated in the protests, they're now receiving threats.
He says paramilitary forces loyal to President Daniel Ortega have killed dozens of his classmates. The government denies any involvement. But Josefa Mesa wonders who else would have murdered her son, Jonathan.
This is the last photo of him before he was shot.
Her other son has now fled the country. She fears living in her own home.
You're afraid of visiting his grave because someone might be there to hurt you. De visitar a su tumba, tiene temor. Sí.
Josefa told us she is now, too, considering leaving the country. And with an economy battered by turmoil, with job losses estimated in the hundreds of thousands, there is concern the low number of Nicaraguans seeking asylum in the U.S. will climb. Manuel Bojorquez, CBS News, Managua, Nicaragua.
Three high-level State Department officials made an unannounced visit to Cuba, returning to the U.S. Wednesday. It follows attacks on two more diplomats, first reported last month, and another similar incident at a U.S. post in Guangzhou, China. But so far, the U.S. has come up short on what or who are behind the attacks. Dan Rundy is a senior vice president with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
We have to not operate from a place of denial. There are too many attacks. It's too purposeful.
The State Department also confirms it's completed a long-awaited report on the case as it prepares to brief Congress. Police in Toronto, Canada say they haven't found any evidence to support a claim by ISIS it was behind a mass shooting in the city last Sunday that killed two people and wounded more than a dozen others. Police identified the gunman as Faisal Hussein. He died in a shootout with police.
Cell phone video appears to show the alleged shooter dressed in black and armed with a handgun. The first 911 calls went out around 10 p.m. Witnesses say they heard 20 to 30 gunshots.
I thought it was fireworks at first because it was a rapid fire.
Clip being spent, reloading. That's what I heard.
First responders quickly swarmed the area and engaged the suspect.
There was an exchange of gunfire.
Toronto Police Chief Mark Saunders says the suspect died from gunshot wounds. He says it's too soon to know the shooter's motives, but that the attack was not random. The attack took place in Toronto's Greektown neighborhood, which investigators hope will help them in their search for evidence.
We've got numerous witnesses that are here, any types of cameras that are going to be available, dash cams that may be in the neighborhood. So I'm hoping that there are more avenues and more opportunities for us to get those small pieces of the puzzle.
Local lawmakers say the attack on such a family-friendly area is absolutely particularly shocking. Disturbing.
I mean, this is a street where people walk every day to go do their groceries, to have dinner, to have an ice cream, sit in the square, enjoy their summer, and it's absolutely devastating.
Though mass shootings are rare in Toronto, over the weekend, dozens of additional police officers were deployed to combat a recent spike in gun violence. And about this recent shooting, two city councillors say the attacker was emotionally disturbed as opposed to, say, politically motivated, but that has not been confirmed by police. Tony DeCopel, CBS News, New York.
Police are investigating why a man detonated a small homemade bomb outside the U.S. Embassy in Beijing Thursday.
Social media video shows smoke near the U.S. Embassy right after the explosion. This man says he had just joined the line to get a visa when he heard the blast and saw smoke. Police say the bomber is a 26-year-old man from Inner Mongolia who detonated a homemade bomb made from fireworks. He injured his hand in the explosion and was taken to the hospital. He was the only person hurt. Police have not given a motive. The U.S. Embassy released a statement saying the building was not damaged. Crews quickly moved in to clean up the area, and a short time later, the scene outside the embassy appeared to be back to normal, although with a heightened security presence. John Schumo, CBS News, New York.
The White House says North Korea has turned over the potential remains of American service members killed in the Korean War. It coincides with the 65th anniversary of the Korean War Armistice Agreement.
One by one, boxes wrapped in blue United Nations flags were taken off a U.S. military plane in South Korea. In them are the possible remains of 55 U.S. servicemen killed during the Korean War. The transfer follows through on a promise North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made to President Trump during their Singapore summit last month.
I asked for it today, and we got it. That was a very last minute. The remains will be coming back.
A formal repatriation ceremony is set to be held in South Korea on Wednesday. Then the remains will be flown to Pearl Harbor for forensic tests to identify them.
He had what he wanted. He had the woman he wanted. He had the family he wanted.
Rick Downs was 3 years old when his father, Hal, went off to the war. His Air Force bomber went down on a mission over North Korea. He's been missing ever since.
I call it the wound that never heals. After a while, you get used to having it, and it finds a place within you, and you go on, you live life.
He's cautiously optimistic his father will one day be returned.
You have to really watch your heart here, because this all could just fizzle. This could be nothing. It could be everything.
The remains are believed to be some of more than 200 North Korea has, but about 7,700 U.S. soldiers are still listed as missing. Laura Podesta, CBS News, New York.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, what's behind Facebook's record-setting stock plunge?
Facebook's stock took a 19% dive, slicing off more than $100 billion in market cap.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. We told you earlier about good news for economic growth in the U.S., but it comes after a brutal week for Facebook. On Thursday, its stock suffered the biggest ever one-day loss in dollar value for an American company.
Wall Street isn't liking Facebook at the moment as it sent the social network stock plummeting on its weaker-than-expected revenue forecast. Facebook's stock took a 19% dive, slicing off more than $100 billion in market cap. Jason Brooks, CBS News.
What's behind the sell-off? Here's CBS News contributor, Wire Magazine's Nicholas Thompson.
It's harder to add new users, given how many people already use it. Two, the new products, particularly Stories, aren't making as much money as the old products. And most importantly, the problems they have to fix, fake news and privacy, are expensive.
Meanwhile, Twitter's stock took a beating after reporting weak growth in new users. Ivanka Trump says she wants to focus on her work in Washington at the White House with her father. That's why she's shutting down her clothing line.
Her clothing label, known for affordable fashion targeting young professional women, had $100 million in annual sales. And she told CBS's Nora O'Donnell what she saw as her biggest challenge.
We live in a very fast-paced world, and I have very formidable competitors.
As her father grew increasingly controversial, the name of the label became more than a fashion statement. There were calls for boycotts. In early 2017, Nordstrom was the first of several stores to drop her label. That prompted an angry tweet from the president, who wrote, "Ivanka has been treated so unfairly by Nordstrom." A public pitch by advisor Kellyanne Conway sparked ethics complaints. Ivanka Trump stepped away from her business and became a formal White House advisor. Michael Stone is a branding expert.
Once Donald Trump became president, the brand became very much associated with the Trump name. And to a majority of American women who disapprove of the Trump presidency, it became a toxic brand.
The department stores that still carry the brand, they will continue to sell their existing inventories as the company winds down. Jan Crawford, CBS News, Washington.
MMA fighter Conor McGregor pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct Thursday in New York in exchange for community service and evaluation for an anger management program. The charges come from a backstage brawl in which video appeared to show 30-year-old McGregor hurling a hand truck at a bus full of UFC fighters in Brooklyn's Barclays Center in April.
I'm thankful to the DA and the judge for allowing me to move forward. I want to say to my friends, my family, my fans, thank you for the support.
Pepperidge Farm is recalling several flavors of Goldfish crackers. The company says whey powder used in flavoring may contain salmonella. It follows a similar recall of Ritz crackers.
They join a growing list of products recently pulled, and there have been outbreaks linked to raw turkey, pasta, and melon. Experts say salmonella, which comes from the bacteria of animal intestines, can live in almost any type of food, not just produce and meat. Rachel Lusgarden is a food safety expert at Weill Cornell in New York Presbyterian.
Sometimes the whey itself can carry salmonella.
Whey is a protein associated with milk, and that was how the salmonella may be present in this food.
The detection, you say, is getting better. What does that mean ultimately?
The technology we have for identifying potential pathogens in food and understanding where an outbreak started, these technologies are increasing and getting much better.
Every year, salmonella causes an estimated 1.2 million illnesses and 450 deaths in the United States.
CDC officials say there has been an increase in multi-state salmonella outbreaks recently, but overall, the number of salmonella outbreaks has remained fairly stable over the last few years. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
There have been no confirmed illnesses linked to the recalled crackers. Scientists say they found a massive underground lake on Mars. Correspondent Chip Reed explains.
It's hard to imagine a lake on the desolate planet of Mars, but a group of Italian scientists claims it's true, a groundbreaking discovery in the search for life on the red planet. Even science fiction's Martian didn't find a lake.
I colonized Mars.
But he'd be wise to hold off on buying that bathing suit. The water's a bit chilly. Mars, the fourth rock from the sun, is a lot colder than Earth, and the suspected lake is near the frigid Martian South Pole. Italian scientists claim they discovered it by hitting the area repeatedly with ground-penetrating radar, revealing what they say is a body of liquid water 12 miles wide, about 1 mile under the surface.
So there really is a possibility that there is a big 12-mile lake on Mars.
Yeah. Dr. James Zimbelman, a geologist with the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, says where there's water, there could be life.
Are we talking about whales and dolphins
here?
Oh,
no, no. It would be exciting. I mean, it would be the greatest news of the century if we found a microbe.
Last month, the same Italian space agency that made this discovery released the first ever 3D color video of Mars' frigid surface. But below the surface, it's even colder. So how could there be liquid water? The Italian scientists say the lake is so salty that the water is like sludge, making the temperature where water freezes much lower than that of ordinary water.
The search for life on Mars is very much alive. Behind me are the first three generations of Mars rovers. The fourth generation is expected to be launched in 2 years, a key part of its mission to find the chemical fingerprints of life. Chip Reed, CBS News, at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum in Washington.
Makers of flying cars promise lawmakers on Capitol Hill the vehicles are right around the corner as NASA and Congress explore safety concerns.
Flying cars were once just science fiction fantasy, but now several companies are developing vehicles that can glide through the sky. On Capitol Hill, lawmakers held a hearing on the technology and found out just how close it is.
Today we're employing over 150 people.
Anna Murachek-Dietrich is co-founder of Terrafugia and expects her company's flying car called The Transition to be on the market next year.
I think this is a very exciting opportunity for technology, and I know there's been a lot of hype around flying cars for generations, really, but I think we are very close.
The street legal car would take off from an airport, but experts see a day when the vehicles hit the sky from anywhere. Uber plans to create an airborne ride-hailing service with machines that can fly up to 200 miles per hour.
We are targeting 2020 as the date for the start of prototype testing in our two partner cities in the U.S., Dallas-Fort Worth and Los Angeles.
Members of Congress say there are major challenges to address before flying cars can get off the ground in large numbers.
NASA is studying what regulations need to be adopted so the average driver can start flying.
Assuring the safety of these vehicles for operation in densely populated urban areas will be a major challenge.
The Terrafugia Transition operates similar to a plane, and owners would need a sport pilot license to operate it. But the company hopes to eventually have autonomous vehicles that can pull out of the garage and take off vertically. Nicole Killian, CBS News, Washington.
Coming up,
working 9 to 5 in the Me Too era.
I swear sometimes that man is out to get me.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy.
Do you think it would be wise for the president to sit down for an interview with Robert Mueller?
I do.
Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez.
This president has absolutely no moral compass.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Roseanne Barr is speaking out on TV after ABC fired her for racist tweets.
It hit the internet like a bomb. Barr's tweet calling Iran-born Valerie Jarrett the child of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Planet of the Apes. She told Fox News she isn't a racist, claiming she was talking about the Iran deal.
Which Valerie Jarrett is the author of, and that was what was in my head.
But ABC fired Barr, calling her tweet abhorrent. At the urging of Fox host Sean Hannity, Barr apologized directly to Jarrett for what she called an ill-worded post. Allison Keyes, CBS News.
A couple cops in Roswell, Georgia are under fire for a recent arrest.
Two police officers in Roswell, Georgia couldn't decide whether to arrest a woman during an April traffic stop, so they used a cell phone app that mimics flipping a coin to decide. The result was tails, and the woman was put under arrest. Video of it all surfaced recently. The cops were placed on leave and now have been fired. Roswell's mayor called it inexcusable and unprofessional. Charges against the woman were later dropped. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Alex Ferrer is back this weekend on CBS TV with the case of another whistleblower this summer. He's been telling many of their stories. This weekend, he's got the story of a man who recognized massive fraud at a military contractor. Alex joins me from our studios in New York. Alex, what happened?
This is a fascinating case, Steve. This Jim Holtz-Richter worked at Northrop. And you'll know Northrop because they were the ones who manufactured the B-1 bomber, the B-2 stealth bomber, the F-15 fighter, basically all of our leading defense weapons in the country. And he was there working in product assurance, which basically was keeping track of the parts that go into these stealth bombers and fighter jets, and making sure that the government was billed correctly because Northrop was billing the government for creating these fighters and these planes. And when he is doing his job, he starts to come to the realization that there is massive fraud going on, that the government is being double and triple billed for these parts. We're not talking about cheap parts. We're talking about one part could be $120,000 for the part. And they were double and triple billing the government over and over again to what he said was the tune of millions and millions of dollars. And he approaches his supervisors, and they basically tell him to mind his own business. They tell him to just stop investigating what he's investigating. So he starts to get concerned, and he starts to smuggle documents out of Northrop. I mean, literally smuggle them taped to his body, because he says, you know, I could see myself going to jail. I could see them blaming me for all of this. And then everything just kind of blows up. It turns out that Northrop was being investigated by DCIS, the Defense Criminal Investigation Service, and they secretly reach out to Holtz-Richter, and he becomes a whistleblower and he becomes an undercover agent. And during the course of all this, his cover is blown. Northrop finds out that he's a mole, and his life starts becoming very difficult, to the point that at some point he is fired and he leaves Northrop, and he ends up with his family, his wife and several kids in a homeless shelter. He loses his house. His job is gone. He's working, delivering newspapers, and they're living out of a homeless shelter. This matter starts when his youngest daughter is 3, and it doesn't end until she's 20 years old. That's how long this goes.
So she's in college, essentially. Her whole life
has
been parallel to the struggle her father's been going through.
And you really get, when you watch this, you get the poignancy of it, how difficult it was for them to grow up under this shadow, pulling the blinds down at night, his children pulling the blinds down at night because they were afraid when their father came home that someone was going to shoot him through the window. Well, why were they afraid? Well, it turns out somebody broke into his house and went through the evidence he had. Somebody loosened the lug nuts on his tire, his daughter's tire, and his son's tire so that each of their front wheels fell off. It was a scary, scary time. His wife went out and bought life insurance because she was sure somebody was going to kill her husband and she needed to be able to take care of the family. Now, he'll tell you he has no proof of who did this. He has no way to prove who did this. But that's the cloud he lived under while he was a whistleblower helping the government to prove this case. And he worked together with the Defense Department to prove this fraud claim against Northrop. It's a fascinating story of what, first of all, what one person can do, and secondly, what this whistleblower was willing to put himself through, and you and his family. You get a very personal conversation in this show with his family when they sit down and talk for the very first time about what it was like growing up with that fear every day in their life.
Alex Ferrer, on the Weekend Roundup from New York. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks so much, Steve.
You can catch Whistleblowers 8 o'clock Eastern on Friday nights on CBS TV or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. The Japanese agency in charge of helping workers cope with work is apparently overworked.
Japan's Health and Welfare Ministry is charged with implementing a landmark new law cutting work hours, but a survey finds that the ministry itself is overworked. One quarter of respondents say they are regularly stuck at their desks until 11 p.m. or later. They blamed lawmakers, saying last-minute research requests forced them to work long into the night. Lucy Kraft, CBS News, Tokyo.
Restaurants in San Francisco want to bring back the lunch break.
No free lunch. That could be the rule at working places all over San Francisco under legislation being considered by city supervisors. Many larger companies in the Bay Area offer employees free lunch as a perk, and some of the bigger tech firms provide spreads to rival the fanciest restaurants. But that's the point, say backers of this bill. They say those lavish free lunches are hurting local restaurants. The bill would prohibit in-house cafeterias in new office buildings and tech campuses. Jim Shenevy, CBS News.
And finally this weekend, working 9 to 5 in the Me Too era.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen.
Jane Fonda says she, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton are on board for a sequel to their 1980 hit 9 to 5. Fonda made the announcement at a Television Critics Association conference. She says the story of workplace harassment and misogyny is, unfortunately, even more relevant today. Fonda says she will be an executive producer on the new movie. No details on when filming begins or the target release date. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
That does it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Jake Rosen is the intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.